works better if I'm on. We are so excited to have the HomeQuest be joining us soon. It's a little bit of a wait, and that's actually a great segue into my sermon, because you know what is the absolute worst is waiting. I don't know about you, but I don't like to wait. You know, I find that today, as a whole, people are much more impatient than they were years ago. You know, I remember, I'm still old enough to remember the Sears catalog. I remember when you would order like a toy or something from the Sears catalog, you would have to wait like a grueling 2 weeks if it was fast to get to your home. And it wouldn't even get to your home, right? It would go to like the nearest Sears depot and you would have to like travel there with your family. It was like an outing. You got to go and see if Sears had your order. Or what about the days when you painstakingly had to save up to buy something instead of, you know, just financing it, right? Like, you, if you wanted something big, you had to save and scrape, and it was just so painful to wait for that. Or how about the days of the screeching dial-up? How many of you remember that terrible dial-up tone, which I can't even, I'm having nightmares thinking about it. Right? That would just never fly today, would it? No one would put up with that. Today, anything more than 2 days shipping, you might as well just be torturing someone, right? Everything is financed, so you don't have to wait. And if that little circle on your phone starts spinning when you're browsing the web, if you're anything like me, you're going to slide down, you're going to turn off the Wi-Fi and use your data, because that 5 seconds is just too long, right? Everything is instant today. Except for traffic, right? They still haven't figured out an app to solve our traffic problem yet. When I lived in Abbotsford, I commuted to Vancouver for work. And I needed to be at the job site in downtown Vancouver for like 7 a.m. And we would leave at 5 a.m. in order to try to beat the traffic. And then we would just kind of like hang out for 45 minutes downtown Vancouver with nothing to do, just so we could get out of the traffic. But no matter what we did, on the way back, you are a victim to that hour and a half long, just grinding halt traffic leaving the Portman Bridge. And it was awful. In the dead of, in the dead of summer without AC, my water bottle was empty, I'm dirty, I feel gross, I'm usually running late for an appointment, and you're just completely powerless. You can't do anything about it. You are just stuck. The amount of times that I thought about just opening the car door and walking out and slamming it and throwing the keys over my shoulder and just walking home, right? It just, you can't do anything. You're just stuck there. And maybe it feels like you're stuck in traffic right now in the middle of the summer with no AC. You feel irritable, you're anxious, your soul is parched, and worst of all, you feel completely powerless to do anything about it. You're trying to remain hopeful and to be a light to the world in this dark time and to stay centered and peaceful. But all you want to do is just sleep off the anxieties, sleep off the frustrations, and start again the next day. But the only problem is when you start up the next day, they're still there. They haven't gone away. And it's times like these where sticking to it seems impossible. Sticking to church, sticking to faith, sticking to family, sticking to godliness, just plain all-around stick-to-itness. And in seasons like these, while difficult, it's important to recognize that this is nothing new. There's nothing new underneath the sun. King David, a king who is an ancestor of Jesus and Israel, and he laments in Psalm 22, verse 1 and 2, he says, my God, why have you abandoned me? Why are you so far away when I groan for help? Every day I call to you, my God, but you do not answer. Every night I lift my voice, but I find no relief. Have you ever felt like that? Have you ever found yourself in that situation? I know that I have. And this morning, if you find yourself in a place where you've lost your stick-to-itness, I want you to know that there is a better way to endure trials. There is a better way to get through difficult situations and seasons in life. And James gives us some life hacks, some words of encouragement in his letter. We're going to be taking a look at James chapter 5, verses 7 to 11 this morning. James 5, starting verse 7, says this: "Dear brothers and sisters, be patient as you wait for the Lord's return. Consider the farmers who patiently wait for the rains in the fall and in the spring. They eagerly look for the valuable harvest to ripen. You too must be patient. Take courage, for the coming of the Lord is near. Don't grumble about each other, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged. For look, the judge is standing at the door. For examples of patience in suffering, dear brothers and sisters, look at the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. We give great honor to those who endure suffering. For instance, we know about Job, a man of great endurance. You can see how the Lord was kind to him in the end. For the Lord is full of tenderness and mercy." James opens with an illustration of farmers waiting for the rains to come. And I want to encourage you this morning, if you are in drought of the soul, all you can do is wait. All you can do is wait. Wait on the Lord. Like a tree in winter, all you can do is wait for spring. And so this morning, I want to give you some life hacks on how to not just survive, but how to thrive in the waiting. Because there are some lessons that can only be learned in a drought. I'm going to say that again. There are some lessons that can only be learned in a drought. And one of those lessons is say no to friendly fire. Say no to friendly fire. James warns us in verse 9. He says, "Don't grumble about each other." See, in times of great difficulty, we can get stressed. We can get angry. Right? Have you ever heard the term hangry before? Right? You're so angry that you're so hungry that you get angry. Anyone remember those Snickers commercials, right? Where there's someone who's just like super upset and it's like, not you when you're angry, eat a Snickers, right? That's kind of that thing. Well, they've come up with a new word recently, and that word is pangry. And the word pangry is used to describe how everyone is just pandemic angry, right? There's just this low-lying just anger that people are experiencing right now. Everyone is living in their stress behaviors. I heard on the radio this week that a recent study showed that mental health in North America is at an all-time, a two-decade low. And so right now, everyone is experiencing some degree of isolation, right? The vaccine isn't rolling out as fast as everyone thought it would. There's an increased depression and anxiety. And on top of that, everyone is just a little bit pangry. And all it takes is for the smallest little spark just to lose it on someone, right? Grumbling, complaining, and judging comes easy in difficult seasons of life. But James' timely reminder is to say no to friendly fire, to not shoot your brothers and sisters in Christ, and just to descend into this pit of grumbling and complaining. He reminds us that God is the judge, so we don't have to be. Our struggle is not against people, especially friends. It's with spiritual forces that we cannot see. And so what are we supposed to do when we're all living in our stress behaviors? Ask for and grant forgiveness quickly. Ask for forgiveness and grant it quickly. We're all in this together. And while we're at it, I want to go on record by saying that if you have felt let down by me or if you felt let down by the church during this season, I want to set an example by being the first to apologize and to ask for your forgiveness. Because we are in this together. I know that so many people have been hit hard financially. And if that's you, maybe you need some practical help right now. Please let us know as a church family and we can gather around you. We're better together. And together we will get through this. Say no to friendly fire. Put aside the grumbling and the bitterness and the unforgiveness. Seek and grant forgiveness quickly. And perhaps our greatest witness as Christians, I've said this so many times, perhaps our greatest witness as Christians is not in how we walk in victory, but in how we suffer. Because Christians suffer in community. We don't suffer in isolation. We don't suffer by shooting the friends around us. We suffer together in community, even when we're apart. The second life hack that James gives us is that he's in the waiting. James points to the story of Job as an example of stick-to-itness. He says, "We give great honor to those who endure under suffering. For instance, you know about Job, a man of great endurance. You can see how the Lord was kind to him at the end, for the Lord is full of tenderness and mercy." I love that. Lord is full of tenderness and mercy. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the story of Job, I'm going to give you the Cliff's Notes version here. It's a book in the Old Testament where God and the devil make a wager on whether or not a blessed man, Job, will continue to serve the Lord even in unimaginable suffering. And it's a very uncomfortable book to read. It's uncomfortable because it challenges our New Testament understanding of Jesus. And a lot of people have spent a ton of time and effort trying to understand why exactly it was that Job suffered. But there's no answer given in the book. See, because Job is not written to explain why he suffered. It's not written to explain why we suffer. Job is written not to explain why we suffer, but to inform how we suffer. Which is really the important piece, isn't it? See, the question of Job is a question of attitude. Job asks his wife, he says, "Should we accept only good things from the hand of God and never anything bad?" And now, to be clear, I don't believe that God gives us bad things. I believe that bad things happen. But in other words, we need to understand that are we so quick to lose faith? Are we so quick to lose heart in difficult circumstances? During a drought of the soul, how quick are we to slam the door and throw away the keys? You know, I'm reminded of how James opened his letter. If you remember way back at the beginning of last January when we started this series, he opens his letters. He says, "Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance, your stick-to-itness has a chance to grow." See, the number one lesson to be learned in a drought is that he is in the waiting. That through the trials, through your questions, through your loneliness, through it all, God is with you. He is in the waiting. You know, I was convicted the other day. I was asking God, like I know so many of you are, is when was this going to end? When is this going to be done? When can we get to some sort of normal life again? And I felt God convict me by asking me another question, which is so often when we ask God for an answer, he gives us a question. And what he asked me is, "Who have you become during this time? Who have you become? Do you really want to get to the other side of this trial and be the same person that you were when you went in? Are you just putting in the time card? Waiting for this all to finish? Are you going to lean into Jesus and let him transform you? Are you going to lean into his presence? Because that's what he's inviting you to do. To draw strength from those few quiet moments in his presence. To reprioritize your life and to just take stock of who you are and where you've been and where you want to go. We all need to ask ourselves, do I look more like Jesus now than I did a year ago. There are some lessons that can only be learned in a drought. And so if you're in a drought, I want to encourage you to take heart because he is with you. And if you allow him, if you lean into him, he will transform you. The third life hack that we're given is that all things will be put right. All things will be put right. In verse 8, he says, "You too must be patient. Take courage, for the coming of the Lord is near." See, in the end, God will judge the righteous and the unrighteous. He will make all things right. And so much of the suffering that we've endured is going to pale, just absolutely fade away into the background when we see the glory that's waiting for us. It reminds me of the time that my friend Mike and I decided to go on a backpacking trip into the mountains. We loaded up our packs and we got ready to do the 6-hour hike into Pinto Lake. And it's a pretty grueling 6-hour hike, at least that's what we were told. At about 6 hours into the hike, we found ourselves on a rock slide with no water anywhere to be found. We're on this, you know, this cliff that's at this angle, and we're exhausted and we're tired and we're just so done. And my friend Mike, he just collapses and sits down in the middle of the rock slide and he says, "Joe, I'm done. Let's set up camp right here." And I looked around, you know, feeling what he was feeling, but we couldn't stay there. You're not going to put on a tent on a 75-degree angle. That is just not going to work. We couldn't stay there. So we kept hiking, and about 2 hours later, we found ourselves at Pinto Lake, just a picturesque scene of beauty. Just this crystal clear, sparkling green and blue lake surrounded by lush green grass and against the backdrop of snowy mountain peaks all the way around it. Just absolutely breathtaking. We had arrived. Friends, we can't stay here. There are far, far greater things ahead than any we leave behind. We can live today in confidence, knowing that all things will be put right, that suffering is only for a season. Suffering is only for a season because God is full of tender mercy. And so, friends, if I can encourage you in any way this morning, it's to stick to it. But you might be saying to yourself, you know what, but how am I supposed to stick to it? Like, what do I do when my stick-to-itness has become unstuck, right? What if I just don't have any more endurance left? What am I supposed to do? You're supposed to lean in to Jesus. In Hebrews 12:2, we're charged. We do this by keeping our eye on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, disregarding its shame. Now he is seated in the place of honor beside God's throne. See, Jesus endured the cross. He forgot the shame, and he took on our shame. He took on our suffering. He took on our sin upon himself. In the Garden of Gethsemane, he was so anxious that he actually sweat drops of blood. And finally, he was savagely beaten and nailed to a cross, burdened with the weight of our sin and our shame on him. And in that moment, he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me?" He prayed Psalm 22 on the cross. In all the anguish and all the pain, he prayed that prayer that David prayed. And when his suffering was finished, he tasted death. And we have to ask ourselves this question every day, why? Why would God suffer such a cruel and twisted death? He endured it all so we could walk in resurrected life. He endured it all so that we could be brought into a relationship with him. See, Jesus is not just an example of endurance that we can say, oh, you know what, my life is really hard right now. I'm just going to look. Yeah, Jesus went to the cross. That was pretty tough. So, you know what, I think I'm okay. He's not just an example. He is our strength. He is our strength. He is who we need to endure. Those still quiet moments in his presence, the encouraging word or act from one of his followers, his presence empowers us to stick to it. And this morning, I want to close the service with a declaration. I'm going to ask the band to come on up. A declaration that God will never fail us. A declaration that outward circumstances do not define how good God is or how faithful he is or how much he loves you. We're going to sing the song, Yes, I Will. And I want to read some of the lyrics to you this morning. This is them. It says, the same God who never fails will not fail me now. You won't fail me now. In the waiting, the same God who is never late is working all things out. You're working all things out. Yes, I will lift you high in the lowest valley. Yes, I will bless your name. Oh, yes, I will sing for joy when my heart is heavy. All my days, oh, yes, I will. So, friends, wherever you find yourself, let's declare together that God is faithful, that God is good, that he is with you in the waiting, and that there are some lessons that can only be learned in a drought. Let's sing together.